From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to this Wednesday edition of Washington Watch. Hard to believe it is already Wednesday, but welcome aboard. Glad to have you. I'm Jody Heiss, Senior Vice President at Family Research Council, and honored to be sitting in today for Tony. All right, let me give you some of the highlights for today's program. We'll begin with this.
These charges are rigged. The whole thing is rigged. The whole country's a mess between the borders and fake elections, and you have a trial like this where the judge is so conflicted he can't breathe. What's happening here is weaponization at a level that nobody's seen before, ever. And it shouldn't be allowed to happen.
That, of course, was former President Donald Trump speaking earlier today outside of a New York City courtroom. So jury deliberations began today for the trial that had been brought against former President Donald Trump and Biden campaign donor. Yep, Biden campaign donor, Judge Juan Merchant, shocked many legal experts when he provided bizarre and what many are referring to as illicit instructions to the jury. I'll be talking about the trial with Pennsylvania Congressman Scott Perry, who will also react to the latest news coming from Israel, where senior Israeli leaders now anticipate their war against Hamas could continue at least another 7 months. And later in the program, Tom Fitton, president of Judicial Watch, will be joining me for a further breakdown of what's happening in the Manhattan courtroom. And there's a new poll that reveals that American consumers now view twice as many consumer brands as representing the left. This comes as both political parties have started considering how to handle expiring corporate tax cuts at the end of 2025. So will Republicans continue to aid corporate America's woke agenda? It's a big question. And Paul Fitzpatrick, president of 1792 Exchange, will be joining me for that conversation. And of course, the 77th World Health Assembly is continuing today in Geneva, Switzerland. And even as the WHO works to push the agenda of the left, including, of course, the pandemic treaty, which we're all continuing to track, there are some conservative nations that have balked at this big-footed cultural imperialism. Washington Stand policy editor Travis Weber will be joining me again from Geneva to explain what's going on there. And just a reminder, as I discussed yesterday, we here at Family Research Council are asking for your help. This is a big deal. We need your help in telling state Republican Party chairs to protect life in the 2024 GOP platform. And you can help enormously simply by signing a petition that will be going to those leaders, urging them, and urging specifically the platform committee delegates who will be keeping pro-life values in the 2024 Republican Party, we hope. That's our mission. That's where we need your help. So to sign the petition, you can do so by going to frcaction.org/life, or you can simply text the word life to 67742. That's life to 67742. So we've got a big show coming your way, lots of discussion that is of grave importance, and if you happen to miss any portion of today's program, you can always catch it by going to our website, tonyperkins.com. This and many other archive programs, as well as a host of resources, are there available for you. You don't want to miss any of it. All right, let's jump into today's program. Earlier today, Israel's National Security Advisor, Tzachi Hanegbi, announced that he expects Israel's war against Hamas in Gaza to continue at least through the end of the year. Now, this counters recent assessments that the campaign might wrap up following the current military offense against Hamas in Rafah. And meanwhile, while that is taking place, the international community continues to turn its back on Israel. In fact, there have been rioters now attacking the Israeli embassy in Mexico, and members of the UN Security Council are demanding an end to the Rafah operation.
As Israel rolls out significant ground operations in and around Rafah, the devastation is only intensifying.
Well, that was the personal representative to the UN Security General, Secretary General, earlier today during a briefing to the UN Security Council. And so the bottom line, what are we to make of all of this? Well, joining me now to discuss this and more is Congressman Scott Perry. He serves on several different committees, among which the House Oversight and Accountability Committee and the Foreign Affairs Committee. He represents the 10th Congressional District of Pennsylvania. General Perry, always great to see you. Welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, it's great to be with you, Jody. And unfortunately, the UN was conceived as something that would unite nations, but it's turned into, unfortunately, just another globalist organization that is interested in the destruction of the West and democratic societies like the United States of America and, of course, Israel. And so we see another resolution calling for Israel to engage in a ceasefire. And look, I think Israel would be happy to engage in a ceasefire. And the way to do that is for Hamas to surrender all of its weapons and to surrender in the fight against Israel. And most importantly, to surrender the hostages that they have taken, not only Israeli hostages, but American hostages. Where is this administration? Where is Joe Biden regarding American hostages held by Hamas? And so I guess if you can attack Israel and kill 1,200 civilians and take 250 hostages in one day, you can get away with it, and Israel is not supposed to respond. We need to remember that Israel is responding to the unprovoked attack, unjustified attack on its nation and its citizens by the terrorist organization of Hamas located in Gaza.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, great question. Where is our own leadership here in this country? It's unbelievable. I bet the average American is not even aware or doesn't remember that there are U.S. hostages as well. And the huge question is, where are we?
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Yesterday, I'm sure you saw Algeria propose a draft
right.
At the UN Security Council resolution, a resolution that's demanding a ceasefire in the Gaza Strip. And essentially, it's ordering Israel to immediately stop all its offensive military operations in Rafah. Give me your reaction to that, General.
Well, my reaction is that what I think that the UN Security Council and what Algeria should be supporting is an immediate return of hostages from Gaza, from Hamas, and for Hamas to lay down its arms. And then if they did that, they wouldn't have to call on Israel for a ceasefire because Israel would stop fighting. Israel has to protect itself, and Algeria and much of the UN, as you know, just considers that Israel, because Israel's defending itself, must engage in a ceasefire while absolving Hamas and the operations and the governance in Gaza of all responsibility and all accountability, including the more than 100 hostages, including Americans, that still remain today. Now, of course, the resolution, as I understand it, we haven't read it yet, says that Hamas must return the hostages. But it doesn't say immediately, Jody. It just says must return them. But yet Israel must stop fighting immediately and I guess hope for the goodwill of Hamas to return the hostages, which stole these people from Israel in the first place.
Excellent point. You know, words matter. And you have words like immediately.
Right.
That's a big deal. And it certainly appears to be one-sided in this. How much, you know, I look at all of this, and it just seems as though there are so many ways in which the terrorists here, Hamas, are emboldened, be it from the weakness of the Biden administration or be it from countries like Spain and Ireland and Norway recognizing the Palestinian state that does not exist, and yet they're recognizing it. All of this seems to embolden the terrorists, does it not?
Well, nothing emboldens them more with the so-called Palestinian state than Americans shouting and chanting death to America in states like Michigan, but all around college campuses to be splattered across TVs around the world on CNN and MSNBC as though it's the norm, as though it's what most Americans believe. Most Americans don't want to see death to America. don't want to see death to Israel and don't want to see a so-called Palestinian state get rid of and extinguish Israel from the planet, which is the mission of Hamas. Hamas runs Gaza. Islamic Jihad is another one. Hezbollah, et cetera, all Iran proxies with the avowed requirement to rid the world of Israel. That is their mission. That is their goal. Most Americans don't want to see that, but yet when that's what CNN and other liberal media outlets show, of course terrorists are going to be emboldened to think that what they're doing is working, because it is working. Like you just said, Spain, Ireland, other countries considering recognizing this so-called Palestinian state. It's unimaginable, yet where is Joe Biden? You know what Joe Biden is doing? He's out trying to earn the vote of these people shouting death to America by being soft on support of Israel and being weak. This is how we got into this position in the first place, Jody. You know this. You served in Congress.
Wow. Extremely well said. If I can, General, let me shift gears on you. We've only got a little over 2 minutes left, but the jury deliberations in the Trump trial began today in New York. 30,000-foot view to begin with. Your thoughts?
Well, I've never been a juror, so let me say this. But I'm astounded that they can only hear the transcript. They've asked some questions, as I understand it. They can only hear the transcript reread to them. They can't just read it for themselves and answer their own questions as a jury. But what really astounds me is the instructions from this Judge Mershon, who essentially said, as I read there or heard the instructions, you must convict this person regardless of the facts. The judge is supposed to be an impartial referee and let the prosecution and the defense make its case and be impartial, just to make sure that justice is served, not weigh in, not put his thumb on the scale, let alone his whole elbow or his whole foot. But that's what seems to have happened here to me. It is very concerning for American justice. And all Americans are watching this thinking, what if it's me and the judge doesn't like me or doesn't agree with me? Is this what's going to happen to me now as well? If they can do this to the president of the United States, well, what's going to stop them from doing it to me?
That's a great comment. I think that's a legitimate concern that all Americans should share. Yeah, and I mentioned it coming into the program today that evidently this judge actually donated to the Biden campaign, which my understanding, well, judges are not supposed to be involved in that way.
Right. Judges are supposed to be impartial politically. But if that doesn't indicate
a partial siding with this, I don't know what does. Well Congressman Scott Perry, always great to see you. Thank you
great
so
to
much
see you,
for
Jody. God
joining
bless
us
you.
On Washington Watch. God bless you, my friend. Always good to see you. Keep the torch ablaze. All right, coming up after the break, we have woke corporations continuing to carry the agenda of the left. And it's just a matter of time before they find themselves having to rely on Democrats for tax policies. Republicans have always cut their taxes. Democrats always want to raise the taxes. Now they've all gone left, and the Republicans are not all that anxious about helping them, quite frankly. So what's going to be the solution to all of this? We'll find out right on the other side of this break, so don't go anywhere. Much more coming your way in just a moment.
Sometimes the headlines are overwhelming, and it feels like we're all alone and there is nothing we can do. That is exactly what the enemy wants us to believe. Reading through the Bible, there are many things that are counterintuitive. One of them is that God never uses a majority. It is always a minority devoted to the truth. Here at Family Research Council, we are grateful to stand side by side with other believers for the truth. And as a result, God is making a difference. When you partner with us, you are joining with Christians around the nation in standing together for the truth of God's Word, supplying pastors and parents and school boards with training and resources to stand up against the indoctrination of our children. Together, with God's help, we can preserve freedom for the next generation. Go to frc.org and become a stand member today.
All of us are born with the desire to find truth and meaning. Where did I come from? What happens when I die? While our answers to these questions may divide us, we are united in our need for the freedom to answer life's biggest questions and make life's biggest decisions for ourselves. That's why religious freedom matters for everyone. Religious freedom matters because the powerful have long wanted to control those who are less powerful. Religious freedom matters because the freedom of those who are different is often threatened by those who believe different is dangerous. Leah Sheribu, a Christian teenager in Nigeria, remains a captive of Boko Haram for her refusal to renounce her Christian faith. Chinese pastor Wang Yi is serving a 9-year sentence for speaking publicly against the Chinese government. In Pakistan, Asif Pervez is on death row for allegedly sending a blasphemous text message. All of this because people in power decided different is dangerous. At the Center for Religious Liberty at Family Research Council, we promote religious freedom for everyone, because the only alternative is religious freedom for no one. We encourage Americans and the American government to engage and advocate for the persecuted, and they do. We work every day to bring good news to the afflicted, to proclaim liberty to captives and freedom to prisoners. We do it because that's what Jesus does. We work to give freedom to others because we ourselves have been set free.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to have you on board with us today. I'm your host sitting in today for Tony. I'm Jody Heiss, and again, glad to have you. All right, with the tax cuts enacted by President Trump during his time in the White House, those tax cuts are set to expire in 2025, and lawmakers now on both sides of the aisle have already started internal debates on how to respond to it all. And quite frankly, corporate America has emerged as a target that could possibly see itself caught in the crossfire from both parties. The Biden administration and Democrats are on record as hoping to increase corporate taxes. And as these brands, frankly, increasingly bow to the causes of the left, conservatives have very little incentive to bail out, especially the worst of those offenders. So what's it going to take for woke corporations to wake up? Well, joining me now to discuss this is Paul Fitzpatrick. He's the president of the 1792 Exchange and a former longtime employee of Family Research Council. Paul, welcome back to the program.
Jody, thank you for having me. It's my honor.
Well, it's an honor to have you. All right, let's jump into this. A recent Axios Harris poll showed that consumers view twice as many brands as left-leaning than as right-leaning. Is this an accurate perception? Is this what really is taking place in corporate America?
Well, unfortunately, Jody, you've seen this progression, and it really exploded in 2020 when corporations leaned in on political activism and issues that were very divisive and controversial. And they started canceling customers and debanking and denying service. And we all saw that. Well, that has grown. And you saw brands such as Bud Light and Disney and Target and Nike and some others really embrace agendas that many of their customers rejected. And so it is true. Yes, corporations are rightly seen as being more politicized than they were in recent decades.
Well, you know, we've seen a lot of backlash. I mean, we've all watched this and, Bud Light and Disney. I mean, we can go on and on. There's been a significant backlash. Not only on personal level of consumer boycotts, but states even have divested from funds like BlackRock and similar things due to ESG investment policies and so forth. So what's the big picture status for ESG? What's the big picture status for woke corporations and the pushback that's coming from the right?
Well, as we know, historically corporations had close relationships with Republicans and the right, kind of working for lower taxes and favorable regulations. And that happened for a long, long time. Unfortunately, as your listeners know, I mean, coming out of the UN in 2004, they pushed this agenda. And ESG ultimately was born. What is that? It's the marriage of Wall Street's desire to make money and the left's desire to use corporations to impose policies on the American people that they can't get passed legislatively, right? And so it was really a brilliant plan. And it worked well. Everybody got what they wanted. Corporations, the Wall Street folks are making a lot more money. The activists were getting policies forced down the throats of customers and employees and manipulating capital markets from corporations. A lot of it coming from the big asset managers, BlackRock, State Street, Vanguard. And they really were kind of running unimpeded. But then really starting in 2021, states started pushing back. You first saw state treasurers push back and saying, we are not going to let you weaponize our state employee pension funds and our taxpayer dollars and our cash against the very economies and values that make our state great. And so you started seeing treasurers divesting billions of dollars from BlackRock. You started then seeing attorneys general pointing out the fact that these asset managers and pushing back on the Biden administration and other companies, that they were violating their fiduciary duty because they were imposing ESG principles on investments that were non-ESG investments. In essence, they're taking non-financial considerations when making financial decisions with other people's money. But they also were violating antitrust laws, they were alleged to be, because they were agreeing to zero out fossil fuels from their portfolios at the same time that they're telling their customers, the states, the pension funds, and others, that they're going to invest only for the highest returns. And so after that, you saw state legislatures coming in and saying, we are not going to do business. A handful of states did this, and it's growing. We are not going to do business with companies that are boycotting our core industries. And actually, you've seen other states even more pass laws saying, we are not going to allow you to manage our state pension funds for anything other than financial returns. And this tremendous pushback has forced the big asset managers to change their tune. They're not talking about ESG in the same way they were. Many of them are calling it a dirty word. In essence, Larry Fink of BlackRock, who's really the godfather of pushing this, they have been pushed back. They're having to spend billions of dollars to lobby. And so it's been encouraging to see people wake up. And to be clear, we want American corporations to be very profitable, but we want them to focus on producing good products and services, not on political agendas. And so
that's
starting to see this trend change.
Yeah, I think it's encouraging on the one hand to see the pushback that's come, but it's discouraging on the other hand to see how many of these corporations are going left. This used to be, they used to enjoy the tax breaks that Republicans offered and all that sort of stuff. It's a remarkable shift that's taking place. We've only got about a minute or so left, but what has Congress done to push back against these? I mean, we hear from from people, boycotts and so forth, but what has or is Congress doing to push back, and how do you think this may play out as the tax policy debate gets underway?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. This is when corporations who burn their bridges, unfortunately, with many strong relationships with companies, they're going to come back and say, we want to have the Trump tax cuts extended. They're going to find that some Republican members that historically would have worked with them very gladly are going to say, wait a minute, you need to lay down your arms on the ideological fights. And so, yes, you've seen Judiciary Committee, Oversight Committee, even Ed and Workforce have hearings. You've seen some legislation on ESG. We would like to see more. We'd like to see Larry Fink brought before and forced to testify, brought before Congress and some of these, but some of the big banks have been forced to. And so, yes, there's a start, but there is a reticence, I would say, among some Republicans in the House and the Senate to actually hold corporations to account and really hold their feet to the fire and just have an open, honest debate.
Got to leave it there. Paul Fitzpatrick with 1792 Exchange. Thank you so much for your coming on and joining us today. All right, friends, stay tuned. The World Health Assembly discussion and update is coming your way. So don't go anywhere. We'll be back in just a moment.
Everything we do begins as an idea. Before there can be acts of courage, there must be the belief that some things are worth sacrificing for. Before there can be marriage, there is the idea that man should not be alone. Before there was freedom, there was the idea that individuals are created equal. It's true that all ideas have consequences, but we're less aware that all consequences are the fruit of ideas. Before there was murder, there was hate. Before there was a Holocaust, there was the belief by some people that other people are undesirable. Our beliefs determine our behavior, and our beliefs about life's biggest questions determine our worldview. Where did I come from? Who decides what is right and wrong? What happens when I die? Our answers to these questions explain why people see the world so differently. Debates about abortion are really disagreements about where life gets its value. Debates over sexuality and gender and marriage are really disagreements about whether the rules are made by us or for us. What we think of as political debates are often much more than that. They're disagreements about the purpose of our lives and the source of truth. As Christians, our goal must be to think biblically about everything. Our goal is to help you see beyond red and blue, left and right, to see the battle of ideas at the root of it all. Our goal is to equip Christians with a biblical worldview and help them advance and defend the faith in their families, communities, and the public square. Cultural renewal doesn't begin with campaigns and elections. It begins with individuals turning from lies to truth. But that won't happen if people can't recognize a lie and don't believe truth exists. We want to help you see the spiritual war behind the political war, the truth claims behind the press release, and the forest from the trees.
Stopping the WHO's global power grab. On the ground in Geneva.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, sitting in today for Tony, and thank you for joining us. All right, as you probably are aware by now, the 77th World Health Assembly is continuing in Geneva, Switzerland. And in addition to the renewed push for them to find a way forward with the sovereignty-threatening pandemic treaty that we're all tracking, there's also a lot of time being devoted to things like blaming Israel, promoting abortion, finding more ways to blame the world's problems on climate change, and all sorts of things that you kind of scratch your head wondering, what does this have to do with world health? But anyways, there are some conservative member states that are pushing back, balking at the infringements on their cultural values. Well, joining me now once again from Geneva to discuss this is Washington Stand policy editor Travis Weber. By the way, he also is vice president for policy and government affairs at the Family Research Council. And I should let you know that in addition to joining us on Washington Watch daily this week for updates, he's also providing regular blog-style updates at the Washington Stand. So for reports and photos and other media that Travis will be providing this week, you can visit frcaction.org/who and get all that information, or you can simply text the word WHO to 67742. All right, Travis, good to see you again. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Jody. Good to be with you.
All right, some notable themes that have emerged so far. What are you seeing?
Yeah, I mean, so today at the World Health Assembly, a lot of the morning was taken up by what was known as the Committee A meeting. Committee A is one of the several committees that is meeting during the World Health Assembly this week, and they're reviewing proposals related to the program and agenda that the World Health Organization has in the coming years. And so one of those topics that was really discussed a lot today was universal health coverage. And this is something that the World Health Organization is really highlighting, really pushing. And you have an overwhelming majority of member states pledging to do what they can to achieve universal health coverage. Undoubtedly, many of these nations have the poor nations with ongoing health concerns have significant things they're trying to address. But it was really interesting to see how lockstep the nations are with this concept of universal health coverage. And frankly, you know, I think it probably means different things to different people. A lot of the European nations were pledging their support towards sexual reproductive health, reproductive rights, even in the name of a global health security concept. That was Canada. Canada's delegate saying this is important to global health security, the same few lines linking that to reproductive health and the like. And so you saw a lot of push on that today. There were some things that were happening out of the public eye too. The drafting committee meeting to discuss a way ahead on the international health regulations and the pandemic accord. But those were several of the things, Jody, that were going on today.
I tremble to ask, who is going to pay for all this stuff? I would assume it would be shared among the member states, but I would also assume that at the end of the day, America will carry or be expected to carry a lot of the financial burden of this.
Yeah, I mean, the funding of this is one of the points of contention. You know, there is a big push for funding. The World Health Organization itself is asking for $7 billion for its next 4 years of work. This is a big increase of funding. Today was acknowledged in one of the meetings I was in at the end of the day that even funding the amendments to the international health regulations is going to be a sticking point in the next few days. And if that's a sticking point, then the pandemic agreement is which requires even more funding, it's more comprehensive, is a sticking point there as well. So funding is a sticking point. And you know, they ask nations to contribute voluntary contributions to the WHO, and there's private money coming in. But we really should look at the money as part of where the leverage is, how things are happening, and where it's going and whether it's going to good use. I think that's, you know, a point that really needs to be addressed as we look at all this.
So as it goes forward, what do you see as being on the docket for the rest of the week?
Yeah, so the international health regulations, the amendments to those are one item that's being discussed right now. We might get a report tomorrow morning from the drafting committee, which proposes some way ahead for those amendments this week, as well as the pandemic agreement. I think it's generally seen that the pandemic agreement is going to be kicked down the road months or several years. The question is what that will look like. The health regulations, some are saying they're optimistic about them being concluded this week. And we'll have to really watch it at what provisions are being proposed that would intersect with the pandemic agreement. But Jody, I think we can expect some proposals coming forth for how that might be addressed later this week. And we should look at where the sticking points still are. I mentioned funding, but there's also a sticking point about sharing of provisions between countries, and the term equity will be applied to this, but really in this context, it's fairness and whether countries should have
about
to dole
15
out,
seconds.
And
yeah, you finish your sentence. We're running out of time, Travis. But listen, I know we'll have you back on tomorrow. I want to thank you, Travis Weber, FRC's Vice President for Policy and Government Affairs, and also with the Washington Stand. Travis, always great to see you. Thank you for joining us. Again, folks, just a reminder, you can visit frcaction.org or text WHO to 67742 for more info. All right, after the break, we've got a lot of lawfare information to bring you regarding President Donald Trump. It's on full display in New York. Stay tuned.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
Jesus said in John 15, "These things I've spoken to you, that my joy may remain in you and that your joy may be full." In 2024, in these divided and uncertain times, how can this be possible? By abiding in Him through His Word. At Family Research Council, we want to help you do that, which is the reason for the Stand on the Word Bible reading plan. In just 10 to 15 minutes each day, you will have read the entire Bible in just 2 years. But more importantly, you will be abiding in Him daily. Find our Bible reading plan at frc.org/Bible. And join Tony Perkins each weekday for a 10-minute devotional inspired by the daily reading and designed to encourage you on this journey through the Bible. Listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. And remember, the grass withers and the flower fades, but the word of our God will stand forever.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, sagecon, to learn more. That's sagecon, sagecon, to learn more.
Glad to have you joining us today on Washington Watch. Welcome back. I'm Jody Heiss, sitting in today for Tony. All right, you have seen it by now, you've heard about it by now, but 12 New York jurors began deliberations this morning for trial against former President Donald Trump following literally hours of closing arguments and instructions from judge and Biden campaign donor, Judge Juan Merchan. And by conflating a federal crime, okay, we have a federal crime that came forth from a state and local misdemeanor. But in so doing, Prosecutor Alvin Bragg is committing a constitutional travesty with the aid of Judge Merchan. So what can we expect moving forward? And what happens next, I guess a big question, if the jury buys in to all of this lawfare? Well, I don't know of anyone who can better help unpack all this for us than my next guest, Tom Fitton. Of course, he's the president of Judicial Watch. Tom, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always great to have you.
Jody, good to be with you again. Thank you.
All right, so let's begin. Let's just start with catching everyone up on what took place today.
Well, Judge Merchan provided the instructions to the jury. He forced them to sit there for an hour as he read 55 pages or so, it's been reported. He didn't give them a copy of the instructions, and now they're deliberating. One of the key issues today from the instructions is the requirement or the direction by the judge that, in my view, just rigs the deliberations. He suggested that, look, the law requires that you obviously find that the documents were false, the documents showing his payments to Michael Cohen. But the law requires, in order for them to be felonies, essentially, they have to be falsified in furtherance of another crime. And he said, you don't have to agree what that other crime is. Four of you could think of it, agree on crime A. Four of you could agree on crime B. Four of you could agree on crime C. And obviously, that's controversial because most Americans understand that there's got to be a general meeting of the minds on a jury in a unanimous way before you convict anyone of a crime that can send them to jail. And the idea that the government hasn't had to provide evidence of anything and the jury can pick and choose one of three crimes and have a mix of jurors agreeing with each other in a way that is less than unanimous is just astonishingly, an astonishing development in a case that I didn't think could get any worse.
So are instructions like this coming from the judge, is this unusual, or does this type of thing happen along the way? And it just seems to me that this is leading up to what potentially could be a conviction, even if the jury is split, even if they can't decide what the crime may have been from what you're describing, there could be a conviction in the midst of a split decision. So is all this normal, or is this way out of the boundaries of norm?
Imagine being a juror, Jody. I mean, you kind of raise the question. To raise the question is to kind of really just highlight the Alice in Wonderland approach here. But I would take even a step further back. The jury shouldn't have this case. There was no evidence.
Right.
There's no evidence of any crimes. So there are non-crimes that he's being prosecuted for. They couldn't even manufacture evidence that he committed any of the fake crimes they alleged. And so in the ordinary course, in my view, the judge should have directed the verdict, directed a verdict, and ordered that Trump be found or be found innocent or acquitted. And that's not the case here. So the fact that the jury is deliberating, to me, given the paucity of evidence, right, of any criminal activity by Trump, you know, that's just another failure of our justice system. And it shows you how politics has really ruined the justice system up in New York.
Yeah, great. That really is what's going on here. And the ramifications of this, Tom, seem to be far, far reaching. You and Judicial Watch, you all have been on top of this, doing some amazing work, and we thank you for that. But you've obviously been very critical of the judge in this case, accusing him of both abusing civil rights as well as our elections. So this is a political web that abuses civil rights, abuses due process, all sorts of things, but also elections in all this. Tell us what you're referring to here.
Well, the president has a First Amendment right to defend himself, President Trump, and he's been gagged. So Michael Cohen can attack him. Joe Biden's minions can go outside the courthouse and attack him, but he can't attack corrupt prosecutors, and he can't attack and defend himself against Michael Cohen and Stormy Daniels. And so when he can't speak to this issue that's in the public domain, a major campaign issue, his rights are not only being suppressed, but so are our rights. We have a right to hear from our candidates in a presidential contest. And dare I say it, not only the rights of Trump supporters are being violated, but the rights of Biden supporters are being violated, the rights of all Americans are being violated, because they're the ones who are supposed to be able to make a decision based on information. And no one hired, appointed, or elected Judge Merchan to run our presidential campaign. And he's hijacked it, he's gagged Trump, and in effect, he's controlling his campaign on this core issue.
So I'm trying to wrap my brain around all this. Let me throw into this, and I alluded to this a little while ago, how Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg it really has strained to take a local misdemeanor and turn it into a federal crime. So that in itself is a bizarre twist of things. But if the jury convicts President Trump in all of this, what can we expect? I mean, does this become a new precedent that you can take a misdemeanor and raise it to the level of a federal crime? I mean, what if the jury moves forward this, what does that mean?
Oh, well, under their theory of the law, Jody, every politician who's run for office and took steps to make sure a news story didn't get traction or was suppressed or even elevated has to report such efforts on their campaign finance reports. Otherwise, you're all going to go to jail. So, Jody, you know, just turn yourself in for, you know, any work you did when you were running for office to respond to negative press stories and try to manage them. And every politician in America is facing jail under this analysis of the law, certainly those running for federal office. But, you know, to kind of highlight that just shows you that this is not about the law. So in many ways, it's extremely damaging to the rule of law. But, you know, when you ask the New York Democrats, certainly when they tried to, previously you had Judge Aragon fine Trump on nearly $500 million, the governor of New York, to tell businesses, don't worry, we won't come after you. She essentially said, oh, this is just about Trump, don't worry.
Right.
So, you know, I think we've got, the question is this going to be a Rubicon, right? And is this going to result in the regular use of law enforcement personnel and law enforcement powers to jail your political opponents? And that would be the end of America as we know it and the end of our constitutional republic in effect.
Well, they certainly seem to be pushing in that direction. And a case in point, speaking of witch hunts, while I've got you on the program here, Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito just today sent a letter to Congress confirming that he's not going to recuse himself from cases involving President Trump or January 6th. In fact, he believes any reasonable person would conclude that the flag that he's involved in that controversy, that raising a flag does not meet the standard of recusal. So your thoughts on this? This is yet another example, isn't it, of trying to twist the law for political purposes?
Well, you had the sleazy New York Times go and publish photos of his homes, where his wife had posted some flags. One was an American flag upside down. The other was an old-fashioned Revolutionary War flag, historic flag, and suggested because some of the wrong people in the New York Times estimation like those flags or use those flags for different political purposes, Alito somehow had to recuse himself from January 6th and Trump cases. It's absurd. They're now literally trying to change the composition of the Supreme Court in key cases because a justice's family flew a flag that some leftist nut job doesn't like. And Alito, in a letter today, said, go jump in a lake. And not only no reasonable person would require me to recuse myself, but those who would, he suggested, are just clearly trying to change the outcome of Supreme Court cases. So good for Justice Alito in pushing back and defending his rights and his poor wife's rights, because they're smearing his family as well.
Yeah, and where were these people demanding recusal, say, for Judge Merchan, who actually was a political donor to President Biden and now pushing a political, doing the hard work, if you will, in a lot of ways, trying to take down a political opponent? Where was the demand for recusal there? Why and how have we become so one-sided in our judicial system?
Well, you know, most Americans see the judicial system as an area where the law is supposed to rule. You want disinterested judges. You want the fair administration of justice. For the left, everything is politics, and it's all power politics. So the judicial system is not immune to their craven politics. So Judge Merchan obviously jails their political opponents, and so he gets a pass. Justice Alito, he's going to rule the wrong way. Justice Thomas is going to rule the wrong way as far as the left is concerned. So they're going to be smeared, and they're going to try to rig the Supreme Court by knocking them off cases or undermine the Supreme Court generally by false allegations of misconduct against conservative justices. So this is all power politics, and Americans need to reject the left's efforts to politicize the courts in such a dangerous way.
Yeah, because, I mean, you come back full circle with what you just said, and you have to connect the dot and honestly ask, when did flying an appeal to heaven flag, when did that become a crime? I mean, Justice Alito, how is that considered a crime? And what you just said is it's not about the law any longer. It's about a political agenda and pushing forward the agenda. So it does not matter if the law has been broken, if it's advancing a political agenda, you overlook the law. On the flip side, if you fly a flag and we can make it look like it's a violation of the law, then we're coming after you. Is that more or less what you're saying here?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the left thinks the American flag is controversial. Of course, they're going to think a Revolutionary War flag is controversial. Well, at the same time, flying, we just, one of the buildings near our offices, Health and Human Services headquarters, a month or two ago, had a transgender flag flying. You're not dealing with folks who think they're going to be held to any standard or feel a desire to be held to any standard. It's what they can get away with. And they have a media that helps, cultural institutions and political institutions that provide them cover. And it's up to Americans like Judicial Watch and Family Research Council and others to kind of push back. And I tell you, because the wall is thin, and it's like the thin line between the rule of law and the left-wing chaos and revolution.
So let me ask you, Tom, as we've just got a couple of minutes left, but are we going to get back to Lady Justice being blindfolded, or have we crossed the line to where the judicial branch now has become a political arm of, in this case, the left, but whatever majority party happens to be dominating at any given time? Is there a way to get back to equal justice under the law?
Well, I think it applies in certain circumstances and still works in courts across America, even at the federal level. But the left is focused on undermining the rule of law by trying to jail their political opponents, which is exceedingly dangerous and can undermine the general trust Americans have in the judicial system. And of course, the Supreme Court is uniquely immune because of our U.S. Constitution and the powers given to the Supreme Court under the Constitution. Remember, the judicial function resides in the Supreme Court. And so that's why the left is hyper-focused on that, because the Supreme Court's been issuing rulings defending life, opposing race-based discrimination, woke discrimination, defending the rule of law in ways the left objects to. And so they will destroy anything that gets in their way. But it's still a powerful institution under our Constitution. So they still have significant challenges to completely destroy it. But it doesn't mean we can't be, it doesn't mean we can be any less vigilant and relentless in defending the rule of law against their attacks, because they're never going to stop. We just have to be vigilant 24/7.
Tom Fenton from Judicial Watch, I can't thank you enough for all the incredible work that you and Judicial Watch do. Thank you so much for joining us today on Washington Watch and for giving us your expertise on all of this.
Thank you, Jody. Appreciate it.
All right, friends, that wraps up this edition of Washington Watch. Thank you so much for joining us. It's our honor to bring you the news from a biblical perspective. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.